Blog Talk Radio.
You really don't understand, do you? Hey, man, don't you realize in order for us to make this thing work, man, we've got to get rid of the pimps and the pushers and the prostitutes and then start all over again clean.
Hey, look, nobody's pushing me anyway, okay? I mean, not you, not the cops, nobody, man. I mean, you want to get rid of the pushers, I'll help you. But don't send your people after me.
You know, come on, John. Can't you see that we can't get rid of one without getting rid of the other? We got to come down on both of them at the same time in order for this whole thing to work for the people.
Hey, look, nobody's closing me out of my business.
Welcome, family. Welcome yet to another edition of Making a Connection, where I'll be your humble host, Soke Hassan Khalik, along with my co-host, Hashi Salim al-Rashid. Thank you so much for being here each and every Friday as we sort of, you know, go on with a legacy. And that legacy is with this program we call Making a Connection, along with Doc Radio, which is a program that's on Blog Talk Radio. And I think you should understand those connections because all of those things come together that makes us viable to be able to be here to communicate with you. So without any further ado, I'm just going to bring in my co-host, Hashi Salim al-Rashid. Hashi, are you there?
Eye to eye, Soke, yes, I am.
Heart to heart, my good brother. Just wondering if it, I'm looking over here on your board here. I see a whole lot of our good friends are already logged in here and are ready to go. I'm just thanking them for being a part of our continuing effort to spread the truth, as I like to call it. You know, truth gets everybody's attention. I kind of want to, I guess, lead with that because I know you and I were sort of perplexed as to what we would talk about here tonight. We talked about so many things, so many great shows that have been on the docket. Again, these are things that are on your mind. Just let us know what you're thinking, and then we try to get it out here so we can put it on the table, as one of our good listeners, Tiny 2.0, would say, make a gumbo out of it and be able to feed everybody with that, you know, mind, body, and spirit. You know, that's what we do. Again, kudos to all of those warriors who have weathered the storm thus far and so many things that have been designed to take us down and separate us and things of that nature. I'm always trying to pay homage to those brothers who just live by the no excuses code. Just get it done. I think that's one of the most powerful things that martial art has allowed us to be able to do as people who serve in the martial art. You know, we sort of evaluate it, or as we would say, AIO, adapt, improvise, and overcome, and keep it moving.
Yes, sir.
And so, again, much kudos to all those warriors who have survived. Speaking of survival, you know, I'm always giving good props to my brother, Grandmaster Nathan Ingram, who is the editor-in-chief of The Deadly Art of Survival, doing a great job. They're up to their fifth edition, and they're doing a great job of making sure that people get recognized in the martial art. You can find that magazine on Amazon.com. You might want to pick it up as soon as possible. They sell out, not sell out. They've gone to number one as bestseller on Amazon for 5 issues in a row. So you might want to pick it up and start your own library. You know, publications is not like it used to be where you had to run out and get a newspaper on the corner. You can actually just push a button on your computer and get a full-scale readout on things. You know, some media people have decided to recognize me. I know you had called me to congratulate me this morning. I didn't even know it was out, but here in New York we have an Afro-American newspaper called the Amsterdam News, and I was recognized in there for my martial art contribution. So thank you so much for the recognition on all those people who have called me to congratulate me. That's something else, Hans. You know, you wake up and somebody says, hey, congratulations. I'm like, yeah, thank you. For what? So
exactly.
When things are out there before you even know that it's out there. And I just heard one of my students, Jamie Hector, who is actually an actor. You may have remembered him from The Wire. He's actually starting a new series on HBO called We Own the City. He's back out there doing his thing. There's some great work in acting, but his training has been highlighted in the martial art, being one of my students. So his article is in the New York Daily Times. So that's another article you may want to look up and check that out as well. I give Jamie Hector his props and kudos on being able to move forward and to recognize me as his teacher. That's in the New York Times as well. So there's a lot of publications out there now you can get a piece, but please do not forget, please write this down, May 14th. That's a Saturday. That's less than 2 weeks from now. We're in the countdown mode, where the Deadly Art of Survival is going to be doing their first martial art convention. I'm calling it that. But it's going to be set up, Hanshi's, you know, like how Comic-Con is set up. I don't know if you know about how they do with the comic books, where they have these booths where everybody in the magazine is going to be able to sign off on their article in the magazine. And there's going to be some demonstrations, some food there, as well as a great opportunity to meet and greet, especially since we've been under Corona for a while now. So kudos and respect to all those people who have recognized martial art as of late, and I'm proud to be one of those people who they highlighted to send the message, so to speak. And I thank you all for the purchase of the magazine and your support and, you know, making sure that we show ourselves as a family together. So thank you so much for that.
Yes, sir.
Honestly, that sort of goes right into our program here today. I started out by talking about the truth, and the truth is something that we all like to rely on, but the truth can be puzzling sometimes because is there such a thing as a double truth, a truth on top of a truth? And I didn't get a chance to talk to you too much about this one. But I'm just going to ask you the question here directly online. Is there such a thing as a double truth, a truth to confirm the truth? What do you think?
Oh, yes. In my estimation, to give an example, you can have a truth, and you can also, like Einstein did, try to prove himself wrong and come up with another truth. That the truth is the truth.
Mm-hmm.
saying, you know, following the science, you know, science is science. And, you know, you can try to whip it around and do your calculations and blah, blah, blah. And you can do the calculation a different way. This also goes with AOI. You can do your compilation a different way and come up with the same damn truth. Check.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. So in your opinion, there is such a thing as a statement would be true to say that there's a double truth.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Without saying that one truth negates the other, is that what you're saying?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
You know how we have that expression, and so I know a lot of people have heard, the truth will set you free. But I've never heard an expression that says the truth and the truth will set you free. So do you need to be set free twice, or is it just, I don't know. I don't want to go too deep on that one.
Okay.
But, yeah, I guess that's
okay.
Go ahead, brother. Mm-hmm.
I'm going to age myself, man, because there used to be a thing when I had older people talk in the exclamation point on what they were telling you, they say, and that's the double truth, Ruth. You know?
Oh, okay, yeah, and that's the double truth, Ruth. Yes, sir. I've heard that many a time. And so I guess that's the truth on top of the truth. And I guess we're going to examine that expression in martial art here today. Thank you so much for calling in. I already see some hands raised up. Our number to call is 646-716-6825. You press the number 1 when you do that, and let us know you want to make a comment. But I do appreciate so much all those people who called in just to listen in. And any complaints, the number to call is Hanshi Salim Al-Rashid. And anything that I say that you don't like, you can take it up with him. But anyway, this is your show. And hopefully your opinion is the one that will make somebody go, as it really is in every show, right, Hanshi? I mean, I know
right.
I find myself on many a times when you brother start speaking. But again, we're going to jump right into this in a minute, but I just to set it up a little bit so you guys can think about where I'm going to go with this one. But the double truth, is there a truth on top of a truth? And is that second truth, does it edify the first truth? Like I have been known to say many a times, and my students will confirm with that, is the truth needs no evidence upon itself. It's simply the truth. 646-716-6825. I don't know how to. Let's open up the gates on this one and see who we get, what we get.
Yes, sir. We have Tiny 2.0.
Tiny 2.0, joint lock. What's up, baby?
Can I get a figure?
There you go. Somebody going to think you out of your mind till 8 o'clock. Yes, sir. Heart to heart, good brother. What up?
Everything is good. Can I get
AIO?
Yes,
AIO.
What I'm
you should know what that's about right about now.
Sir, yes, sir. And before I kick off this first ingredient in this great big old cast iron pot of gumbo we got going here, I want to send a respect and courtesy to all of my dojo uncles and aunts all over the world. I want to send a respect and courtesy to all of my dojo brothers and sisters all over the world who may call tonight and those who are listening in and will not speak. I want to send a respect and courtesy to you as well.
Yes, sir. Heart to heart. Yes, sir.
And get off into this topic. You said, does the truth need help with the another truth? So is there such thing as a double truth? Is that correct?
You hit it right on the head. You mixed the words up there a little bit, but the message is still the same. Yes, sir. Come on.
Okay. Okay, man, I love you, man. But remember that show called Different Strokes? Remember when
yes,
something
sir.
Would happen and Arnold would say, what you talking about, Willis?
What you talking about, Willis?
What you talking about, Willis? Okay. The truth don't need no help, Arnold. The truth don't need no help. I'm going to say this
okay.
right here. Water boils at 212 Celsius. Water freezes at 32 degrees Fahrenheit.
I
said all
yes,
that
sir.
To say this right here. That's a truth, and water will not boil until it reaches that certain temperature, and water will not freeze until it reaches that certain temperature. So I'm gonna, man, I hate I have to do this with you, Uncle. I have to disagree with you on it. I can't go with
come
the
on,
truth.
Come on.
The truth don't need
all
it,
right.
Either
the
you kill that
no
man
help.
Or you did not kill that man.
Mm-hmm. Okay, come on
that's
now.
Well,
I could. Thank you, brother. Thank you. Well, Tiny just opened it up for you. He just dropped it in here and said, deal with it, Hans. He just said, don't need no help. That water boils. he gave me a scientific equation. he didn't just leave it at boil. He said, let me go to the other end of that tube. Let me tell you when it freezes.
Yes, sir.
And anything in between, it's just water. That's all right.
Exactly.
It's just water. Yes, sir. All right, thank you for that. I'm going to let the rest of your family get in here. I got about 10 heads up on this one, and I don't want to slow it down because I'm going to take this back at you in a minute. We're not going to leave martial art here, but, you know, we got to do martial science first. We got to put some science in here. So thank you for that, nephew. We're going to hold on for me, get you a hold on, and bring you back in a minute. Is that all right?
Sir, yes, sir.
Hot to hot, good brother. You know that Tiny boy, he come in here, he be opening up the door and just dumping it in here. He don't be asking no permission, just put it down. Yeah, I gotta talk about his truth, and I love his enthusiasm behind the truth, because I tend to think that that's what gives us confidence as well. You know, we as martial artists, we know a lot of things to be true, and you can come whatever you want. I'm standing on the side of truth. And, you know, you're going to have a hard time beating me because, you know, the truth is the truth. But our question today, is there such a thing as a double truth? So let's see if we can get anybody else in here, Hanshi, so I can keep it moving.
Yes, sir. We see your time is getting.
What's going on, CJ?
Hey, Master. How you doing this evening?
I'm blessed, man. Everything is good on this end, man. Congratulations, man. I don't know if you've been to New York lately, man, but, you know, You running around here, everybody's going, I know that guy. Like, again, congratulating C-Jaw. Again, congratulating C-Jaw. Yes, sir. C-Jaw Getlin on making the cover for Deadly Art of Survival. Just congratulating you again, brother. So many people have been saying so many great things about the article and it, you know, and your legacy speaks for itself. Like you said, you ain't been here in a while, but everybody still remembers you well.
Humble bow. Thank you so much, sir.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Well, come on, help me out with this here today. You know, we're just talking to Hanshi earlier about the double truth. And I asked him, the first question I asked him, is there such a thing as that?
Yeah. Man, you know, The funny thing is I always seem to be in opposition to everybody, but I'm gonna go along with you. I absolutely believe that there is a double truth, and first let me state my belief of truth is fact supported by evidence. Anything else other than that to me is nothing but opinion. And Brother Tiny made a great point, you know, about the boiling point and the freezing point. But what he may or may not have forgotten is, well, somebody got to put the pot on the stove and somebody got to turn it on. Those are also true.
Come on now. No, this is what he's saying. This is what he's saying. I'm bringing Tiny in just so you can get a little bit of clarity on this. Now, just back it up like 10 seconds there, CJ. It's because what? Put it on the stove. And that's also a truth. Right.
Yes. So, you know, one thing ain't going to happen without the other, you know. So it's a truth upon a truth.
So, you know why I say that, though? You know, well, I think a lot of people would disagree with us when we say that there's one truth upon, because we tend to think that truth erases all falsehood. If I can only look at one truth, then I don't have to decide or make what I call an executive decision or become a critical thinker to be able to evaluate those truths. And I just rely on that one. That's the one you told me, then that's the one I'm going with, and anything else is a falsehood. It couldn't possibly be the truth about the same subject. And I think that's where we were going with this. At least I know that that's what I wanted to share. And this is not to disclaim anybody else's opinion or whatever, but, you know, please come on, share with us if you think that there's a no such thing as a double truth. That it is that. It's only one truth evidence upon itself. So, you know, we can say quotes, we can move with it, but a lot of times we have to be able to evolve with the evolution of a truth as well, because there was a time when we believed that nothing heavier than water can float on water. That was a God-given truth given to man for hundreds, if not thousands of years. But how can a 80-ton battleship survive on float on water? How can something heavier than air? These were truths that were self-evident upon themselves. I throw a rock up in the air, it ain't going to fly. It's heavier than air. But how can that thing that we call a truth still survive and become something else? So my point is, what we think of being true now, even in the martial arts, can easily be challenged and still be a truth, making it a double truth. 646-716-6825. CJ, I'm going to let you finish your comment, but I hope everybody got that, and that's fuel for Tiny's conversation as well as CJ Getlin. But go ahead, brother.
I would just say, again, you know, let's stay within the realm of our expertise, martial arts, right? It's going to be many of people that will tell you that in order to be a good fighter, you have to practice your kihon, right? They're going to tell you how to practice that kihon. But there will be an equal amount of people that will tell you the practice of kata is going to give you all the tools you need to be a good fighter.
You stole my thunder, brother. Come on now.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
But go on and teach the lesson. I'm right here. In session.
But once again, each one of those is a truth, and it can be supported by fact and evidence. And so it is a double truth. There's not one way of coming up with the equation.
Yes, sir. Thank you for that, CJ. And good night, everyone. We're going home now.
Show's over.
And that's the way I was going with this and a certain thing. But let me see if I can get some more opinions in here, CJ. I'll bring you back in a minute, though, okay?
Yes, sir.
Thank you, CJ. CJ Getlin coming in here, turning the light on. I mean, turning the light on really hard. And again, supporting the double truth. And Tiny saying, is it no truth? Truth is evident upon itself. One truth is all I need. Interested in what you may be saying as well. Remember, our number is 646-716-6825. We're going to turn this into a round table here in a minute, but I got a couple more hands up here. Hashi, who else we got?
Yes, sir. We have Blackhawk.
Blackhawk flying low today. Yes, sir. What's going on, Hawk?
Eye to eye, heart to heart.
Yes, sir.
Greetings and blessings, everybody on the line and everyone listening. You know, when we talk about the truth, I always say the truth is universal. And that kind of, what I mean by that is that truth is going to hold true in multiple scenarios, in multiple applications. And when we're talking about martial arts, that's principle. Different stylistic, systematic approaches to martial art, but balance is balance. So when I say the truth is universal and it rings through a multiple avenues, that's kind of in line with what you're saying, Stokey, as far as, you know, the double truth, right? It's proven itself over and over and over again because the truth is universal. And I like what you said, Soke. The truth evolves, and the way I look at that, or you know, one thing was true, but now you see that, you know, there's an evolution that does happen. I would submit and say this about that: the truth is the truth. What evolves is our understanding of that thing that is already there. Check.
Well, I know that sometimes we use the truth as a balancing thing and to say, well, if this is the truth, then that's not the truth. And you know, it's much like the in the criminal justice thing, the statute there with the blind justices, that I don't know which is on which side of the scale, but there should be a balance in that in order to have law and order. At least that's what I interpret that to be when they show blind justice. It's just that I'm not really favoring one side or another. I'm just going with the truth. And the truth, when it comes to law, is the law. The law is the truth, and it's the truth because we said it is. And so if we want to do turn that around, we're going against the truth. That's not the truth of what you're doing. And I think in sometimes in martial art, we have a tendency to say that that's not the true way to do something, because this is the true way. It works for me. It works for the most people, but it could not possibly be the truth. And now we're going to examine this in a minute when it comes to different techniques. I'm going to ask you a couple of questions about it, and it may get you to choke on your words a little bit here. But, again, just be forthright with whatever you're going to say. You'd be like Ralph Crandon.
Yes, sir.
Just say what it is. And I tend to think that that equates to the phrase, the truth will set you free. Because once we come to that conclusion of understanding that that which I thought was the truth now is flawed, maybe my equations of what I was told need to be reevaluated. Maybe. And I tend to think that we too much as black belts, especially if we want to call ourselves AKA grandmasters and such, we have become so astute with what we knew to be the truth as if it can never be anything else but that. And that's okay. In this conversation, that's okay. If you're willing to, as CJ said, evidence, I'm bringing him back here in a minute. What was that you said to CJ about evidence among itself or proving itself to be a fact? Was that you that said that?
Fact supported by evidence.
Come on now. Facts. Write that down, Hanshi. Facts supported by evidence. You know? So we're going to bring some facts to support the evidence. Isn't that much like in a court of law? You know, we want to talk about how Pookie was nice and he was a good, but Pookie, we got some facts here. Pookie was caught on camera. You know what I'm saying? To support the evidence that we brought him up here. I know Pookie was good in the eighth grade and he got good scores, but the fact is, Pookie done did something wrong. And this is the evidence that we got, and that makes this the truth. I know you want to think, you know, because they know mama think they baby did it, not my baby. You know, so, but we gotta bring out some facts here, though. But thank you for that, Hawk, and I think everybody's adding to the conversation really good here. I think that everybody can appreciate everyone else's viewpoint. But, Hanshi, let me keep it going here because we got as Tiny said, it's starting to smell good up in here with that gumbo. Who else we got in line? Mm-hmm. I'll bring you back in a minute, Hawk, okay?
Yes, we have Shake the Poet.
Shake, my brother, what's going on?
Peace and blessings, Soki. Peace and blessings, everybody online. How y'all doing?
Peace be unto you, brother. Yes, sir. We're all doing good. Thanks for checking in, man. Got some conversation here going today about a double truth. First of all, have you ever heard of such a thing?
Yes. Yes, I have.
Okay.
This, we were discussing it, and it had to do with, like, assault and stuff like that. You know, I was in a women's summit, and they were just, you know, everybody's, what do you call it, experience is different. Like, it was, oh, well, my truth is this, my truth is that, you know. And, like, you kind of stole my camera line I was getting ready to go with. But I tell my kids, like, the kids that I train, I ask them, what two numbers make 10? And the most common answer is 5 and 5. And I always say, well, that's wrong. Sir. That's the same number twice. That's the same number twice.
Yes.
1 and 9 makes 10, right. Yes. 2 and 8 makes 10, so forth and so on, right? There's all these different ways to get the right answer, making them all correct, right? So
like
with
that.
A double truth, if a brother spends time with Sensei Black Hawk and Sensei Tiny, and he hang out with Sensei Black Hawk, they get into some stuff, and Sensei Black Hawk says, hey, Brother Shake, I can trust this guy with my life. And then Sensei Tiny is like, look, I got this dude on camera stealing from me, man. I wouldn't trust this joker farther than I can throw him. Which one of them are wrong? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
They both have
mm-hmm.
a different experience with that truth. And I think that is something that can be applied with almost anything that we do, just because even with the martial arts, martial science, hey, this technique, you know, it works ... all the time because of whatever, you know what I mean? Well, it doesn't work for this person the same way, so forth and so on. So I think something doesn't necessarily have to be wrong in order to be non-applicable for that situation, you know, or for that person.
Yes, sir.
So I think that's where a lot of that double truth comes from, you know. I think it is very possible.
Okay, and I appreciate you for that, for summing it up that way. You captionalized that really well. I was taking notes over here about the 5 and 5 because you're right. I know how she told me this morning that 5 and 5 is 10, and I said, "Listen, brother, you got to change them numbers because there's several ways to get to the equation, and one does not." And I think that math is such a great example of the double truth because there's so many ways to evaluate the equation, and the same arithmetic is the truth for mathematics, is the truth for the next stages of mathematics, the trigonometry, and so forth and so on. But they all have a common denominator. I want to ask you this before I bring you into the roundtable here, Sheikh, is that why is it do you think that people are so comfortable with owning the truth? Because you said that in your statement. You said in the group, people would say, well, this is my truth, and this is my truth. What makes people so comfortable with ownership on the word truth?
Well, it's either cognitive dissonance or just, you know, people like to hold on to something. They don't like being wrong, you know, and they like feeling validated, you know. So is that validation is what makes more the truths that they believe come into fruition in their head, because that's all that matters. You know, like even if you look at, take some of LeBron James and Michael Jordan, you know what I mean? Like those who love Michael Jordan say LeBron James sucks. Like they have to deteriorate everything this man does in order to elevate Michael Jordan, right? So you have to have that for you to feel validated, for you to feel like your opinion or your facts, we're going to call them, are substantiated or something like that. You have to dismiss everything else, like, you know, cognitive dissonance, for example, you know.
Great example. Well, I appreciate that. You know, that's my cue to bring your brother in back in here. Black Hawk, you got an open mic. CJA, you have an open mic as well. Tiny 2.0. You have an open mic. If you guys are in a noisy background, you can mute yourself and then let yourself come back in whenever you do want to talk. But I just want to step off of that what Brother Sheikh had put out there, gentlemen. You know, that kind of the thing that you do to put down something else to make your truth, as he said, all that matters. Talk to me a little bit about that, Hawk.
You know, what I find a lot of the times, and, you know, I agree with what Brother Sheikh said, a lot of times people aren't interested in let's say, solving a problem. Let's come at it from that perspective. They just want to be right. So they're not interested necessarily in the truth. They're going to hold on to, like you said, to their truth because they don't want to be proven wrong. Sometimes swinging back around to, you know, I like to ask people, do you want to be right or do you want to solve the problem or the issue or the puzzle? Because sometimes the two aren't necessarily mutually exclusive. You know, you can't say cut off the nose to spite the face. You can't say, you know what, this is what it is, and, you know, you was wrong for what you did. And you're shutting yourself into a narrative that all you care about is being right, and it don't matter if the whole house is burning down around you. And that's not the way to go, and that's a lot of that's when you say people like, oh, this is my truth, they don't want to say, hey, listen, this is what it was, but maybe I'm wrong. You tell me what you saw. So the easy way out is, this is my truth. You know, you don't have to worry about someone saying, but that's not what happened. That may not be what happened, but this is my truth. It's that stubborn, you know, Caribbean, we call it being hard-ears. you know, you got a hard head. You don't really care what's happening. You're rolling with it. Despite, as Caesar would say, the fact being supported by the evidence, you don't care. Check.
Mm-hmm. Celine?
Yes, sir. I agree with Hawk because we have a lot of that going on today, in today's climate, you know, where you see, you know, the truth, their truth is the only truth, and I don't give a damn what you say. It's like Shake the Pole said, cognitive dissonance. You know it, you see it, you smell it, but you refuse to bear witness to it. You see, so you got to walk by a fool every day. Just walk past them. But getting to your points, okay, you live in your truth, try to explain your truth, and if that person doesn't get it, they don't get it. They don't want to get it. You know, so mm-hmm. basically I leave them where they are. Chad.
CJ, owning the truth.
I actually love the conversation because I think that each of the people who have spoken have been right, which is a mm-hmm. double truth, right? I believe
yeah.
that Hawk
mm-hmm.
was right. There are universal truths. I believe that Brother Shake is right. There is your truth, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I would tell people, if I eat carrots, it's going to make me sick. That
mm-hmm.
is my truth. But if you
yes,
eat
sir.
Carrots, you might love them. And that's your truth.
Mm.
The universal
yes,
truth
sir.
Is that the carrot is orange. You know? So I don't think that they exclude one another. You know,
mm-hmm.
the problem is that when you believe that your opinion is the truth.
Oh, did he do that? Did he just do that? Oh,
that was
goodness.
A liver shot, man.
Man, that was
right.
a sweet stomp.
Yeah.
Oh,
man. I hit a quitter.
You ready to go? You ready to go, Sophie?
Yes,
let's end it.
Yes, Tiny.
I was listening to Brother Shake, and when Brother Shake said about the analogy from 5 + 5 = 10, but also 9 + 1 = 10, 7 + 3 = 10. At that point, as he was talking, I started thinking, what was the difference between a fact and a truth? 7 + 3 is a fact that it's a 10. 5 + 5, that's a fact. It is 10. 8 + 2, or any combination that you could think of that could get you 10. When you think of looking like that. But also the truth, see, that goes back to what I was saying earlier about that universal truth about it really don't need no help. So now I wanted to ask the question, what's the difference between facts and the truth?
Well, you know, I'm going to give you a dictionary definition right about now. I wanted to make sure I got everybody's comment on that. But to speak to the Brother Shake's equation in the mathematical equation, he said when he asked his student to give him two numbers that equal 10, he said most of them would say 5 and 5 as their first answer
sure.
to the question, even though we know there's different ways to approach it. But his way of getting them to be critical thinkers was to understand that there's more numbers than just 5. Why would you take
yes,
two 5s as opposed to, so it is a truth that they both are 10, but give me two, without me saying to you, give me two different numbers. When I say give me two numbers, you really only gave me one number two times.
Yes, sir.
And I think that's
wow.
what hit
yes,
me from the back. And I said, oh,
yes,
see, when you have that epiphany about how the truth can be perceived a different way, then as CJ
yes,
said, it stops being an opinion and you need to register it as an opinion. And there's nothing wrong with having one. As my uncle used to say, everybody got two, what was one of each opinion and a You're right. So, you know what I'm saying? You're entitled to have all the opinions that you want, but do not state them as being facts. So let me give you a quick definition of what the dictionary says, and it kind of explains it in five words here. It says, truth, the body of real things. And they just dropped the mic right there. The state of being in a case. Well, there's a couple of others here, but don't really speak to, you know, concluding things. But it just says the body of real things. And that's the first answer that it gives for it to be the truth. A body, it doesn't even have to be something physical. So looking at things like that, I was real interested in this ownership of the truth, because when people say, well, my truth is, and they have the right to say that, but I don't know, can you really use the word truth and my at the same time without negating it and calling it an opinion? Yeah, and without calling it an opinion. I don't know. Let me get a sound bite on that one. Hanshi, the truth and an opinion. Is your truth just an opinion?
No.
When you make a statement, well, my truth is.
No, I don't start off with that. I start Tiny? With science.
I agree with Uncle Hanshi, and the reason why I say that is because it changes from person to person. And at that point, you know,
okay, but let me stop right there, because I want to just get a consensus first, and I'll let you guys go back and edify your answer. Because when you say no, and then when you go back to explain it, it seems like you're contradicting yourself. And again, I'm gonna ask: is when you make the statement, "My truth is that an opinion or is that the truth?" CJ.
No opinion. I'm sorry.
You know I'm not going to agree with.
You know how I feel.
I absolutely believe you could have your truth.
Okay. And Black Hawk?
Yes, sir. I don't think it's an opinion, because that's real to me. That's my truth. This is my reality.
Okay. Shake?
I don't think that my truth is an opinion. It can be sometimes, but I think my truth can be the truth.
Mm. But the reason why, and I think that you're all right, it's just that we, again, back to ownership. We're clear to make the truth belong to us, because as we said earlier, it shuts down everything else. My truth. Let me go into this other side right here. The authority to be the truth. Let that marinate for a minute. The authority to be the truth. Now, let me just say something. In my mother's house, whatever came out of her mouth was the truth. Okay? I didn't get a chance to have an opinion on it or whatever. It was the law. Now, law comes in different forms, right? We have policemen that think when they speak, it's the truth. Get out the car. Why? I don't have to tell you anything. That's the truth. I'm the law. I said get out the car. And then when you go to question it, they would make it seem like you broke the universal truth law, like you would defy me when I tell you to get out the car. So, you know, and on and on and on. So the authority of the truth, when how much of that remains being the truth simply because someone that was put in authority of the truth in the case of the law actually is the truth. So you're going against the truth now? I don't know. That may get you a backhand in my house, you know. And say,
I know, right?
Mama said, take out the garbage, and you like, well, the truth is, you said that Linda take out the garbage once, and I take it out twice. You said that was the truth. What I say, boy? So she could change the truth whenever she wants because she has the authority. I'm just trying to draw your scenario here. Shake, come on, help me out with this one.
That was funny. So almost made me change my answer because of that. But no, so remember what I was saying was, like, your experience is going to be your truth, period. You know what I mean? That's not going to change. If I experience some trauma with you, you know, you did something to me that was wrong. It doesn't matter how trustworthy the rest of the world believes you to be. And the proof, they have all these scenarios and all these opportunities for you to, you've shown this and that. You got all these newspaper clippings of what you've done in the community and all this other stuff. You're an upstanding citizen. But behind closed doors, you know, you're like one of these, you know, one of the priests that are touching little boys or something like that. And I have that proof, or I was that little boy. Guess what? That's my truth. Nothing else matters.
Mm.
It's not my opinion, though I can't, I may not be able to prove it to you or anyone to believe it, but it's still my truth. It's a fact. The only, you know, it's a fact, and it doesn't become everyone else's truth until they accept any proof that I'm able to show them. Because, you know, the truth is, you can show people facts and stuff all the time, but if they don't accept it as that, it, you know, their mind doesn't change, then it's still your opinion in their minds, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, the authoritative truth was really what I was getting at, because the judge becomes the authoritative truth. And when enough, as Sijal said, enough evidence has been presented to him that he deems that as being the truth, and he's the authoritative truth.
Your mic is kind of chopping up.
Okay, let me see what I can do about that. Is that better?
Yeah. Yes, sir.
Oh, okay, thank you. What I was saying is that, if it goes out again, let me know and I'll try to switch. What I was saying is that the question was about the authoritative truth. And a judge inside of a courtroom becomes the authoritative truth. Like Sijal says, when enough evidence is presented to him, he puts it all together and says, well, this is the truth. He did it 20 years. Well, the guy he just gave 20 years has a truth of his own, and it's a real truth. He really didn't do it. That's, as you just said, his own truth. So these double truths, one can trump the other on the authoritative side. Come on, CJ.
That's right. That's 100% right. I don't know what can be added to that. The thing is they don't have to be mutually exclusive. I'm a stick with this, right? If you said to 90% of the country, fish is healthy, they would agree that is the truth. But there's 10% of the country that would tell you fish is deadly because they're allergic to
mercury.
Now, each one of them has their own truth.
Yes, sir.
Right. But the authoritative truth
says be disputed because each one of them have facts supported by evidence. Well,
but in the end, in the end, a decision is usually based on what's deemed as being the truth.
Right.
And that's why he's doing 20 years. That's why we convicted him. That's why I shot him. That's why I punched them. That's why I did, because it was the truth, and I have the truth on my side. And it makes us feel that we are closer to the divine intervention in the sense that God was on my side because I represent the truth. Holy wars were created based on what people deem as being the truth. Jihad, there's a bunch of people running around right now as we speak that think that that's the truth of what they're doing, based on what they think God told them to do that. Mm-hmm. Now, this is what I mean by the authoritative truth. We keep on bringing in our higher authority to edify our truth. So, again, that opinionable truth. So it gets to be, I guess we're getting closer and closer to, maybe that says a thing is a triple truth, huh? I don't know. Maybe there's a triple truth, a truth, a quadruple truth, I don't know. You know, we can talk about that, but I think it's a moment in our life for us to understand that that the truth can be perceived different ways and not to be so steadfast in believing that our way of looking at stuff is the only way. That brings us to the top of the hour, family. Did anybody else want to conclude on this segment here, because I want to go take this into martial art in a second. Hawk, I didn't give you a chance to speak. Did you want to say something about that?
Just that everyone kind of hit the nail on the head with that. I don't know how much more I can actually add. And I, you know, at this point, for now, I don't even want to try. I'm just enjoying the conversation.
Yes, sir. Tiny, I know you out there trying to keep that rig on the road, right? But I don't want to leave you out. Did you want to end up by sharing something with us?
One thing I can say is, from the beginning of the show to this very first checkpoint where we are right now, I see things different just by listening to what you guys are saying. And, of course, I still see what I'm saying as well, and I'm lying, putting it where I say it, putting it in line with what you guys are saying. So I can honestly say that I'm walking away with a different view of what a double truth really is. And now I know that it does exist.
Yes, sir. Well, I thank you for that, Tiny, because that's the mission of this show, for us to think about things in a wider perspective. I tend to think that we go by the width of a man's mind will allow us to be able to see the depth of it. So if we can see how wide it is, we can feel how deep his mind can go. And I think that's how we get expansion. As they say, the universe is constantly expanding. So I don't understand why mankind should not think that he is not doing the same thing. You know, there's an expression that says there's nothing new under the sun. And we should really believe that. You know, all of these plastics and things that we have now, they were here millions of years ago. There ain't nothing dropped from another planet here. We just expanded our minds to learn how to use the materials on this planet a little bit better to make things easier. That's from fire to everything else that's always been here. And for us to think that our expansion has stopped, that this is where it is, it's not so. I think that's one of the reasons why there's so many movies that express morphism in a human being and trying to be something bigger than what he was created to be, superhero, so to speak. Well, he doesn't have to be a mutant, but his mind can evolve into stages, and it's been proven that human beings only use a small portion of their brain. So imagine if we were to learn how to expand it instead of just becoming comfortable. And which takes me to the second part of our program, which is the martial arts segment of it. And I like to think that we have sometimes become too comfortable. And I'm going to spread that across the whole martial art basis in the sense of saying too comfortably mentally, too comfortable spiritually, and much, much too comfortably physically. Because we tend to think that once we've passed a certain plateau physically, we are no longer developing everything in equal proportions. But to be able to use our ability to measure things right down to the fraction of something, I think is very important for us to understand. The fractions are a part of mathematics. Do not think of everything as a whole all the time, you know, just because you got it as a whole. Music is broken down to portions. I know I hit a note there, Tiny, but, you know, no matter what you're doing when it comes to reading the music, you know about quarter notes, half notes. You know, we have to understand that all of these things play a part in the equation of our development. So when I asked you about a double truth, I know that may have been perplexing to some people, but to others it opened up your mind. So I want to thank you for breaking it down so elegantly, everyone that was online here today, Shake the Poet, Black Hawk, C.J. Getlin, Hanshi Salim, and our good brother Tiny 2.0. I see a host of other people in the back office there. I just want to remind you, if you want to jump in on this particular part of the conversation, our number is 646-716-6825. Now, gentlemen, until we see someone else who wants to join us on this, I'm just going to take you into a martial art piece of conversation here. I think you all going to know what I'm saying, if you can just kind of stick to this particular subject that I'm asking about and break it down for me as much as you possibly can, so our listeners can get a better understanding of it. They may not understand exactly what I'm talking about because they may have not had anybody punch at them. And so the question is about a punch. Hanshi, I got a little noise there. Can you find that for me?
Yes, sir.
Okay. The question is about a punch. And please just roll with me on this when I say most martial art, because it's not always all martial art. But in most martial art, from my experience, you've been taught to defend against a straight punch. When it's been my experience that a street confrontation would favor a round punch or a hook or something that's coming around your peripheral vision. Now, I'm sort of going to take this segment and turn it into, well, if that's true, then why not? Then why are we doing it this way? If that's true, then why are we doing it this? Because if that's true, meaning that most martial art systems teach you how to defend against a straight punch long before that they do a hook punch. If that's true, that street confrontations or real confrontations, you'd be more likely confronted with a hook version of a punch. Why is it that we don't start by teaching from a hook punch? Now, again, let me just quantify this by saying, I'm not saying you may be an instructor who teaches from a hook punch, and that's all well and good. Or you may say, well, I teach both, and I don't understand why. It's not what I'm really asking. I just want you to see the world as it presents itself as a truth. Most martial arts schools, when you walk into them, especially, let's say, of the Japanese, Korean versions of it, okay, without me trying to just divide it up too much, but I think everybody knows what I'm getting at here. If that's the truth, meaning they present that as being the truth about defending against a straight punch, why is it that we don't teach the defense against the hook? CJ, I'm going to leave you out for last and for some other reasons. But I want to get everybody else in here first. And so, Blackhawk, real quickly, tell me what I'm talking about here. I hope I was able to explain that well enough.
Yes, sir. For me, I'm going to stay on topic. The reason that I think that is to build fundamentals. And a punch coming straight at you is an easier fundamental to teach getting off that line than timing a round punch. So this goes back to that, what I like to call that Jenga thing. You know, playing Jenga is cool, but if that foundation of that building or that structure or that house starts to waffle a little bit, starts to get, you know, if it's not rooted, if it's not built strong with a good foundation, that whole thing topples along the way, no matter how high you build it. Check.
Okay, well, I'm just going to stick to your first part of the answer because that answered my question. And not that I don't appreciate the Jenga part, but I kind of want to see if I can stack these facts the way you believe them. Okay, so
yes, sir.
It's easier to get off of a straight line punch than it is off a hook. That's the reason why you think that most schools teach straight punch first. Would that be correct in quoting you?
Close. I feel like it's easier to teach.
Oh, okay.
To instruct someone who has no experience to get off the line of a straight punch versus the timing of timing a round punch.
Oh, okay, understood. Celine, check in for me real quick with this so I can keep this going.
Yes, sir. I'll piggyback on Hawk, but I'll also say tradition.
Mm-hmm. The reason why did a straight punch is taught, the defense against a straight punch more often than a hook punch is because of tradition.
Yes, sir.
Okay, great. Thank you. Shay.
Yes, sir. It is my opinion that we start with the straight punch versus hooks, round punches, haymakers, because we have a tendency to learn better with the crawl, walk, run method. You know, a straight punch is coming directly at you, forward, straight ahead. You don't have to worry about how good your peripheral vision is. You know, are you seeing it coming? Mm-hmm. It's easier to time, you know, and especially if it's the first time a punch has been thrown at you, you know, when you lose sight of it, people tend to close their eyes, they throw their hands up, and they cringe. But if I'm looking right at it, you know, as it's coming, as I get comfortable moving out of the way, I get comfortable parrying, I get comfortable blocking, I get my timing, you know, the bone on bone, if I'm, you know, using the wrong part of my wrist or whatever, as I get comfortable with that, then the punches can start coming from different directions. So I think it's just a matter of the crawl, walk, run. Maybe some schools, some martial arts that spend too much time in the crawl phase and not saying, all right, now that you are here, we're going to treat you like we're on the street and just throw these windmills and haymakers.
So again, the crawl, walk, run principle is the reason why you think that most people are preferring that over the hook or the haymaker.
Yes, yes, sir.
Okay, thank you, thank you. Sika?
I think that everybody has actually made a great contribution. I'd like to stay with Hanchi Salim. I believe that the classic arts, the linear arts, have been passed down in tradition, and we don't want to be the one to break our instructors' instruction. But I believe we have failed to evolve. We are still using muskets when we're supposed to be using 9mm.
Okay.
With that being said, everything starts out of foundation. You know, there's a reason why they do it, you know, in building that foundation. But once again, how long we stay there, I think we failed to evolve.
Okay. Thank you for that. Gentlemen, I have one more person that wants to join into the conversation here, and we're just going to pick it up from him, and that would be our brother Carlos out of Detroit, and then we're going to just see if we can add a little bit more light to this. All right, brother. What's going on, brother Carlos?
Dr. Hart. Oh, it's okay. All is well.
It's good to hear you, brother. Our conversation today has been about the double truth, and we sort of moved on a little bit behind that, and we're asking the question about what some people believe to be a truth, which is the straight punch in some traditional martial arts. And we're asking the question, and why isn't it that we don't choose to teach the swing or the hook, which is more prevalent to a real or street fight situation?
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Go ahead,
bro. No, I didn't forget you, Tiny.
Okay.
I didn't forget you, Tiny. I just wanted to bring him in, then I'm going to come right back to you. Go ahead.
Okay.
I think that the circular movements are a little more sophisticated in the recovery aspect as far as body mechanics go, especially when done vigorously. So I think it's primarily because the linear movements lend themselves to understanding how to, this is my opinion, the linear movements lend themselves to understanding how to recover, bring the hands back to a cover position faster, whereas circular movements, when you look at something like the thing Bagua comes to mind, it's a little more sophisticated as far as the kinetic energy that's moving through your body, what they call, you know, what some may call chi or the Fa Jing principle. The Fa Jing principle, we see that in straight line with that last twisting action of the punch. You know, oftentimes people come advanced and that twisting action may come at the last motion, at the last moment, or if it's a close situation, that straight punch may have a twisting action, corkscrew action, so to speak, very close, or if not a corkscrew action, sometimes the Milton type action of the wrist going up or down, as we see in Wing Chun. I think when people get more advanced, that sort of thing is one of the jewels that's inside of the Do and the arts that lend themselves more towards introspection and self-discovery. I'm reminded of something that Ahati Kalende Ibayashe told me one time, and just in a casual conversation, kind of like a three kind of like a 10-second comment before he kind of just strolled away, strolled away during class. He said, "There's no such thing as a straight punch." And then he lifted his hand and he threw like a right straight, but as he corkscrew and turned his fist and wrote, you know, moved the shoulder, turned his fist, I saw what he meant in the way if you were to continue that corkscrewing motion and turning it all the way over to where that thumb is pointing down, you can see where even that straight punch and with that corkscrew takes on a circular type of property. And if you were to bring that punch back with a slightly spiraling action, going inward, coming back to I don't know, I was about to say holstering, but chambering, whether it's a high chamber or a low chamber, it takes on a circular and spherical type motion. So I think as far as perception goes, as far as how we perceive things, it's easier for us to perceive the linear than it is for us to perceive the circle or multi-dimensionality, which the circle contains. We know that the straight line is made up of many points, each point being the source or the starting point of any direction. So I think it's easier for the beginner to comprehend, because as we evolve, I think as every martial artist evolve, if that evolution is not stunted, if the self-discovery, I say self-discovery and evolution of understanding of body mechanics, you can see the circle inside of the straight line. So I think it's just a matter of, or I should say the tunneling or the sphere or the vortex inside of that straight blow. Because that circuit, that vortex, as we turn that blow over, takes on that vortex has a spherical quality. So I think it's just a matter of it being easier and easier to start with.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Tiny?
Uncle Silke. what I was thinking, I think it's easier when we start talking about bone alignment and when a straight line, I think it's easier to teach that the development of what's really happening with the knuckles to the wrist to the elbow to the shoulder. And then you got your the rest from the shoulder to the hip to the knee to the ankle, bone alignment from the ground up, as opposed to a hooking technique or a round house technique. You using is no longer the same principle. You're using a different set of muscles and different set of bone alignment when you do that. So now, and you even have to move your feet in a different position. Like, in other words, what I'm trying to make is the feet placement of me throwing a straight punch as opposed to a hooking punch is, and almost, I noticed I almost have to use my knees more than I would straight. So in other words, I think that a straight punch is easy to teach because everything is mechanically sound, and I think it's easy to teach. And as you progress, as the student progress, they'll see and they'll be able to feel that energy in their body when they execute these techniques. And they'll be able, now if anybody listening to what I just said that does not train in the martial arts, you're going to feel the energy through your body when you throw a punch going straight, as opposed to a hooking technique or a round technique. If that made any kind of
okay.
sense.
Okay. Gentlemen, I value everyone's opinions, and I think that everybody had actually evaluated that, again, to your own understanding and your liking. I did not want you to get too far away from the subject, because what I want you to understand is from a native point of view, which means the person who you are practicing to defend against, will more than likely, and has been proven, will throw a circular punch at you before a straight punch. Now, I can't agree with the fact that it's easier. And I say this because if we know anything about depth perception and the human eye, the human eye has a very hard time dealing with depth. If you've ever driven behind a vehicle that has something sticking out the back, by law, I know here in New York that we're told that we have to put something hanging from the end of it to signify depth. In the United States, all vehicles are mandated to have brake lights, because when you're going at a high rate of speed and someone stops in front of you and you don't see the stop, you have no idea about until you get too close before you stop. So the brake light is to indicate by depth perception. The human eye is not made to deal with depth accordingly. Now, you're not a hawk or birds that can deal with depth perception. A hawk can tell you exactly how many meters that squirrel is from him. And that's what he launches his attacks. Why he spot on each time, his depth perception. You don't have your eyes and your head arranged the same way. All right. Depth perception is very hard for any creature on this planet that has his eyes in front of him. You know, there's something that was explained to me a long time ago about animals with eyes on the side of their face are usually animals of prey, because they need their eyes to see what's coming up on the sides of them, because their peripheral vision is not as good as if their eyes was in front of them. So evolution has made their eyes be on the side of their face, so it's not as easy for them to be prey, so they can see what's coming. So I say these things in the sense of when we add that to the conversation by saying it's easier, it's harder to punch to block a straight punch, especially if it's a two-piece coming at you. Now, what I was getting at here, going back to our original part of the show, was the double truth. I think everybody edified the first part of the truth about the straight punch. In your evaluation, you gave some real great reasons as to why we teach the straight punch first. But it is another truth in the street that says that more than likely you're going to get hooked. And if we're really teaching people self-defense, whether we're taking the crawl, walk, run method or whatever, can we really afford to put the run so late in the stage of self-defense? Now, one of the things about a hook punch or something that's coming around from peripheral, it teaches you a whole nother set of nerve twitching. And I'm saying that in the sense that I think it was Shake that said that when we see something coming around, we have a tendency to blink, close our eyes, or run away or move away. And this is true. But at the same time, as I watch some of the great boxers in the world, and I can name a few, that will take a punch looking straight at the punch and never blink. That glove is dead in their face and they never blink. It's because they have gotten used to, or the nerve twitch in them has taught them not to blink, even if you're going to get hit. So now it becomes easier for them to slip a punch because their timing on a hook has to be different. Just hook at somebody and you'll see that hand coming around can make you move too soon or too late. So again, my question to you is, if the preference, making it the truth in the sense of self-defense, if the preference is a hook in the street, much like what maybe CJ was saying, where's the evolution in bringing the hook closer to the front of our teaching of protecting ourselves as martial artists? Now, I hope that wasn't too much, but that's where I'm taking the conversation from here. Should we go to the truth of the street when we're teaching and bring it closer to the student when they walk into our school? Should we be hooking at them or punching straight at them? For now, just give me a consensus of yes and no. Hook or continue with the straight? Tiny.
Hook.
Celine.
Straight.
C-Job.
Hook.
Hawk.
Both.
Aki, I need just one, just for conversation, please.
My bad. You know I'm always, yes, sir.
Yeah.
I'm going to stay straight.
Okay. Shake. Okay. Hey, Carlos.
Straight.
Okay, gentlemen, remember what you said. I'm going to let you now edify it. Please keep it kind of compact so I can get everybody's opinion in here. Go ahead, Tiny. Tell me what you said again. Start out by saying what you said and then tell me why.
I said hook, and the reason why I said hook was based on the lesson, the question that was asked. Based on that, the student would encounter the hook on the street more because that's more effective for the person that's throwing the technique on the street. So I would want to prepare my students for what's going to come more at a frequent amount than something that's hardly ever going to come, like you just explained, the street. So that's why I said the hook.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Celine?
Yes, sir. I've seen many of people get tagged with a jab, straight jab.
I need you to start out by telling me, what did you say? You said hook or straight?
I said straight punch.
What did you say? Okay, straight. So go ahead.
I would take them straight because I've seen a lot of people get tagged with a straight right or a jab. And to me, that's fundamental.
Okay. Okay. CJ.
I said hook again because I believe that we as martial artists have to evolve. I understand what Hanji is saying, but a perfect example sticks out in my mind. I ain't about blowing up nobody, but a very, very high Japanese instructor, almost with a godlike name in karate, made the mistake of going into an open seminar and telling somebody punch, and they punched him right in his face. Because he expect step back, step forward, straight punch, straight line. And they didn't do that because they didn't follow his rules. They did what they were trained to do, which was for the street. And the man who was practicing the linear art was ill-prepared to deal with it, even when he told him to do it.
Yes, sir. We've all got a lot of true life stories. Hawk?
Sir.
You still with us, Hawk?
I said straight. Yeah.
Straight, go ahead.
I'm sorry, Sokey. Yeah, I said straight because I still believe in starting at the fundamentals, but I can't remember who it was. I think it was several individuals that really touched on a great point. The mistake is people stay too long at that stage. So I still believe you start with straight, but then you do have to introduce the hook early on as well. Check.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Shay?
Yes, sir. I said hook. My reason, make a long story short, I feel like I own body armor. I have two pair. I have one that's for a rifle. It's a lot heavier than the one for a pistol, handgun. And if I am more likely to go outside and get shot by somebody with a rifle, I need to have on the proper body armor. So I feel like bringing it in sooner, very soon, all right, even if it's today we're doing straight punches, the next day we come in, to mix it up, because the likelihood, in my opinion, the likelihood and the frequency of straight punches in street fights is not even 50-50. In my experience, in my opinion. So I think it's more important to go with the hooks a lot sooner.
Thank you, sir. Brother Carlos.
I said straight, and my feeling is straight because it's not only teaching how to deal with a punch, but it's teaching how to deal with someone. It's teaching how to deal with a grab, someone coming, going straight forward grab. It's teaching how to deal with a push. I think that the action of someone coming, moving their hand towards you in a straight line, whether it be the push, whether it be the grab, whether it be to reach out and grab your face and scratch and whatever, I think that overall you're going to come in contact with the straight punch more so. I mean, that straight action. Again, whether it be a push, whether it be a punch, whether it be a reach out to, you know, and scratch you in frustration or whatever, I think the punch. Now, as far as the hook being defense against the hook being introduced early, I think if you study any of the classical methods and as you go, as time go on, if you haven't already for our listeners, the defenses against hooks are within your bunkai of your movements. It's just not something that's focused on, but it's in there like the spaghetti stuff. Yeah, straight, those
okay.
reasons of that movement being something I think that you'll come in contact more often than you will a circular motion and, you know, all of the various things that can happen on the street.
Okay, thank you. Thank you so much for your comments. But, gentlemen, we have that the classical we have the classical dilemma. We have three and three. So six people online, and we have divided that line with three and three. So we're on both sides of the line, which is great because it speaks to our subject that we started with, the a.k.a. double truth. And because it is true, it's true in both instances. And what I was just saying is that I take the approach of the Chinese, so to speak. The Chinese were well known for, and they're not the only ones, but in the martial arts, for studying the animals and studying what's natural motions to an animal, the praying mantis, the snake. These things that are natural. If a snake is in danger, how he will more than likely pause. He just doesn't run away. And when snakes are in danger, you just stomp your feet and they start running. They usually pause, like, you know, getting ready, like, okay, which way you want to take this? So they give you a chance too. And many animals in the animal kingdom do very much the same. There's that pause, as I always say. When you watch two dogs or two cats fight, they say, and then it's this big pause, like, okay, we good? We're going to take this to the next level. And that thing is such a natural phenomenon when it comes to animals. And as I said, the Chinese have studied them until they try to understand how maybe they can incorporate that in their style of martial arts. And so this ego, the crane, the mantis, the tiger, and things of that nature, they mock these animals and the traits that they do. And very, very beneficial. But I use them as an example because if we're talking about the urban street fighter, a.k.a. stick-up kid, a.k.a. bully, a.k.a. person that don't train, a.k.a. person that don't train, that don't like that you train, a.k.a. person that's quick to tell you, whether it's in the magazine or online or anyplace else, that shit you doing don't work in the real world, in the street. Come on now. Come on. Stop acting like you don't know who I'm talking about because the world is full of them. The magazines are full of them. The comments is full of them. You can't put up nothing without somebody telling them that wouldn't work in the street. Now, even though it's not our position to prove to them the science in this thing, and I shouldn't have to knock out everybody to prove that my science works, whether it's the straight or the round, I would say the only thing that I would add to the conversation is that maybe I should study my adversary's common denominator moves more often and train closer to that than I would trying to get to the point of going around the long way, so to speak. In other words, if I was to teach you division and multiplication before I taught you addition, I can probably, and subtraction, I can probably teach you mathematics, or a.k.a. arithmetic. But I would tend to think it would be just a little bit harder because I'm not giving you the concept. I'm giving you the answer before I give you the equation. I'm not allowing you to able to move in the fight. So I would say studying it from a perspective of the adversary in which I'm training for, my first preposition was to think whether I should have my hand in the AKA chamber or not. When I'm punching, should I be able to punch from what I now deem as a name I made it up, but it works for me in my school, the high chamber. And the high chamber is a chamber that's semi in a blocking position, and my punch launches from there. So whether it's straight or round, I'm prepared for his straight or round, because it's all about me countering to end the fight. So if I'm thinking about this in real combat terms, I want to think about how, as I always tell my students, it's chess, not checkers. How am I going to prep myself to be able to be there before he even gets there? So when he lifts his hands to punch at me, why are my hands not up as if I'm going to punch? Why am I treating my punch as if it's just a punch instead of a block or a block or a punch? Why am I not using my limbs as if they are means to attack as well as defend? I remember the first time I got hit with a Hakaru strike. And Soke Little John Davis. And for those who don't know, the strike that he called the Hakaru strike is hitting you with your his forearm. And it goes right back to what Brother Carlos was saying about the rotation of that hand. Well, the hand came out straight, and it came around at the same time. It was coming straight and around. And what I thought I was going to get hit with was a fist, but the fist traveled beyond my vision, and he hit me with his forearm in the side of my neck. And before I could say, what the hell was that? My knees had buckled. But my point in saying it, that he didn't use the strike as if a lot of common people would do. Now, and I also take that as that was a street technique. Because a common fighter will wail his hand not to hit you with his fist. He throws his whole arm at you. You move right into the range of the fist, or you move out of the range of the fist. He's going to hit you with his arm and deliver his body weight on you. I can't tell you how many times I've seen guys knocked down and knocked out from a body weight punch, meaning the guy missed with the fist, but that 180 pounds came at the times the velocity of the square equal mass of gravity or whatever you equation you want to use, and boom, you were down. Because you got hit with a tool that was designed to batter you, whether it be with his foreknuckle, his hammer fist, his knife hand, his palm heel, his all of these things that we deem as being the tools of destruction. The street fighter don't really care. All he cares about is connecting. And it's that connection that can cost me the fight. It can cost me the ability that I'm not going to be able to recover. You know, there is such a thing as getting knocked out. I think C-Job made a great example of that when he said that, a profound martial artist. His truth was punch, thinking that this individual was going to live up to his truth. I can't tell you how many times, and this is real for me as well. I'm doing a demonstration. And I got cold cock one time on the side of my jaw by a Uki. And this is a Uki student of mine, because I said punch, even though he punched in a traditional way. I was busy running my mouth to the seminar and paying attention. Boop, clipped me right off my jaw. So, again, what is it you prepared for, or why are you so assured that somebody's going to use, as we said earlier, your truth? If your truth is about this, and the guy in the street's truth is about connecting to your jaw by any means necessary. So what I was kind of asking here in short is the truth of the streets something that I should be considering in my truth and teaching my truth? Now, even though we have, like CJ said, we have evolved, because we understand the values of the straight punch, as Brother Carlos said. We understand the sciences. We understand, as Ahati said, that, you know, there's no such thing as a straight punch. But these were aha moments for us. The guy in the street is basing 90% of his stuff off of sneaking you. And sneaking you, to him, does not appear in the way of straight. Sneaking you is coming from around your peripheral. That's what he wants. He wants the punch to sneak up on you. So can you defend against a round? Yeah, if you take your time into it. So again, I give kudos back to boxing, because boxing is constantly teaching you from day one. They're teaching you the evasion part, or the preparation not to get hit, long before they're teaching you to hit. And so again, one of the reasons why it's called the sweet science is because, again, there's some science in that. But 646-716-6825, I didn't want to go too long with that. I'm going to let you guys comment on what I just said, but I want to bring another guest in that just raised his hand, and hopefully we can add to this conversation as we come closer to the last half hour of the show. CJ?
Yes,
sir. That would be Guru Vic, isn't it?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Guru, are you there?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Soki, how are you?
Yes, sir. I'm blessed, brother. It's good to hear you, man. I don't know how much of the conversation that you heard, but I want you to dive in here from the point that you want to make the contribution, and then maybe I can back up and tell you what we discussed thus far.
I want to start from, first of all, the punch I would say would be a hook, and because of, and I would also say an unskilled fighter would throw a hook down from the hip coming up. He wouldn't do dance or whatever, because he's just launching a punch, circle of punch. He's untrained. A trained fighter will put his hands up and come at you with this jab cross or whatever. But
right.
In the street, like you just said, all he want to do is connect, knock you out, run your pockets or whatever, and be out. But I'll say a hook from a low line, from the hip area, circular, and, you know, you just have to train either cover or bob and weave it, which most of us are, well, all of us know about me, so.
Yes, sir. But I'm glad you said that, because you just became the tiebreaker. Earlier, we took a consensus, and there was six people online, and three said hook and three said straight, and you just added it to hook. But you made a great point there that this street fight is not trying to box me. He's not trying to fight me. He's trying to connect, and as you just used the street term there, that's so popular, run them pockets. And if he needs to throw a two-piece, you're getting a two-piece until he can get to them pockets. Or his boys or whatever are going to keep throwing those until you submit to that. Whether you knocked out or knocked down, they're not really thinking about anything else. So let's see if we can get everybody in on that, Guru, and then I'll let you finish your comment. But agreed, Brother Carlos? Agreed, Sheikh? Black Hawk? Cijal? Agreed? Tiny?
Sir, yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
Absolutely.
Good. Absolutely. From the aspect of, I said, when I say the street fighter, I'm not really talking about a fight. I'm sorry, go ahead. Who's that?
When you say agree, you mean agree to the
agree to the part that when I say street fighter, the likelihood is that he's not quote unquote fighting me. He's just trying to get off his, you know, his two piece or whatever, and that it more likely will be, as Guru Vic said, it will be coming from the hip.
I think that's strictly cultural, regional. Just as in, and again, I know we're not talking about boxing. We're just going to use boxing as an example.
Okay, one second. I want to catch you sentence by sentence now, because we're getting close to the end of the show. What do you mean by strictly regional?
Can
she find that noise for me?
They talk about Mexican boxing, right? Mexican boxing.
No.
Hooks.
But go ahead,
so
go ahead.
You may be in a region where they like to throw hooks. You may be in a region where they like to throw a right. I know coming up, where I came up, you were looking out for the right cross. When you got snuck, 9 times out of 10, you were going to get snuck with a right cross, and they were going for the button. And it might be somebody who wasn't trained, but when they were trained to run the pockets, 9 times out of 10, they was coming, yes, from the arms to the side, but when they came up, they was trying to line you up for that right cross.
Let me stop you right there, Brother Carlos, because you were on the straight punch side. When we asked the question, you said the preferable way to teach was to be from the straight punch, but you just said 9 times out of 10, it was a hook. So what my original question was...
I said it was a right. I said Mexico, they throw... It's regional. Like in Mexico, they throw a lot of hooks. It's regional.
Well, I don't know... there must be a lot of Mexican people in Brooklyn because a lot of them throw right hooks too. So
you know what? You know what? Perhaps not Mexican, but definitely just like with breakdancing and that sort of thing, a lot of influence from Latino and that sort of thing. So you may be actually.
I don't know. Let me let your brethren get in on this one. See, y'all, regional.
I honestly, you know, I think that we're going a bit too far. We're not talking about trained fighters. We're talking about the common everyday street thug. And
right.
No, I don't agree. I believe that they just swing.
Blackhawk? Regional? Like, you know, I'm appreciating what Carl's saying, but we're not talking about a street fighter. I want to edify that. We are not talking about, we're talking about the street. The guy that's in the street that's fighting you, not the street fighter. There's no contest here. This is somebody that, you know, walked up on you, didn't like what he said or whatever, or the stick-up kid or whatever. They want to knock you out, then pull the weapon. There's been some kind of prelude to this thing happening, and that we know that basically it's imminent that there's something's going to happen. I don't know. Is that regional? The approach of a hook over a straight punch.
Because when people are in the street, again, not a street fighter, but in the street, survive, just like people are have some sort of preparation for survival, if somebody is in the street, they generally going to figure out a tool to sucker punch somebody with. And a lot of people...
I got that, Carlos. I wasn't asking you. I was asking Hawk. But we got your point. We're just discussing your point right now. Go ahead, Hawk. Is it regional?
Yes, sir. I don't think that it's a regional thing. You know, even if you're in Europe or wherever, if someone's going to sneak you, the kind of universal thing that tends to happen out there is no absolutes. I'm going to start by saying that, is they do that thing where they take one step back, they look over their shoulder like they're turning away, and they're coming back at you with, like, it's going to be around the corner.
Gentlemen, I really don't want to discuss the approaches and whatnot. I'm just trying to figure out whether or not the hook over the straight punch, which is more prevalent, and I believe somebody said earlier in the conversation, I think they gave percentages like 90% of the time, and you can't make statements like that and, again, go back to calling it the truth and then not prepare a student for 90% of the time. Guru Vic, help me out here. Am I on the right track?
Okay, yes, sure. Can I add something to this?
Yeah, sure.
I work in a prison, and a lot of the assaults that I've come across where people weren't trained. Now, I could tell when a person's trained because he put his hands up, and I know he's got some boxing skills. So that alerted me. But the people that tried to sneak me came from out of nowhere with a circular punch and tried to take my head off. And that was like I experienced this for like 14 years. So that's my experience as far as people that or just street, and then the kids that I train, they're coming off the street that have no idea of form and function or anything, and they come in when I ask them to show me a punch or show me a hook, they drop their hands and come from the hip again. So I'm just going from that. That's the only experience.
Yeah, and that's what the conversation was about. It's about the truth that we witness. But when we come back to the school, as I said, I don't want to go too far away from the subject here because the original subject was a double truth, okay? And we know that the way we were raised is a truth. There's a truth in the straight punch. There's a truth in learning how to get away from something that's coming at you at whatever the speed is. A punch can come at you straight. And as Brother Carlos said, the rotation of the punch and turning, and there's no such thing as a straight punch. All of those things are true. But we got to go to the truth of what Guru Vic is saying here, that I wouldn't agree that it's regional. I believe that no matter where you're at on the planet, more likely if you tell them somebody in the street, they're going to come from the hip. Let's say in the percentage side, let's even go 51%, 49. 51% of the time, this guy's going to come from the hip. There's a thing about body dynamics that teaches you, especially when you're inexperienced, put shoulder to shoulder any 10 inexperienced people and ask them to punch that bag. They're going to draw their fist behind them. Yep. They're going to pull for power because they feel that's where the power is. And when they pull a fit, and some people like what I call cockfighting, is they throw their chest and then the fist comes behind. You react to the flinch and it sets you up for the punch. 90% of most punches are in the street, the puncher don't even see his own punch until it lands or misses. What I was saying here, and it's getting back to this because we're getting kind of close to the end here, is should we continue with our truth of the straight punch when we know that there's a truth in the street about the hook punch? Should we introduce that truth earlier in our training? And that's where I was going with this. So, you know, the dynamics of what a person would do and how they would throw it and sneaking and all that, we know these things to be true too. But what I was really asking is, how do we come to an understanding that perhaps we are antiquated in the way that we are delivering, quote unquote, self-defense? And that's kind of where I was going with this. Brother Tiny, I hadn't let you in a minute. I'm going to bring you. I'm bringing everybody back in, so hold on. I want you to kind of just bounce off of what I said, and then you can make your opinion.
Uncle Soke, I wholeheartedly agree with you about the guy that's on the street. You know, he's going to come at you with that wild haymaker.
Yeah.
And us as teachers, and we know that, we should be training our students for what they're going to encounter, because the chances of them encountering that on the street is greater. And that's just like
stop right there, Tiny. Stop right there. I don't want to cut you off with your examples, but you gave me a perfect response to my comment, which is I think that we no, you don't have to. I love it when y'all get right there, but then you just go way off over there somewhere, and I'm like, no, it ain't a mess up. Trust me, gentlemen. I love every word that you guys speak, but it helps me nurture the question so we can get to a greater understanding, because we're doing layers here. So I get that, and I'm going to try to get everybody else's in here as well, though. That's the only point,
sure.
But please don't think I was cutting you off, though. Thank you.
No,
Brother Hall.
Yes, sir. No, definitely. We should definitely introduce that rounded hook punch early into the training. It makes perfect sense.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And CJ?
Well, again, I stick with what I said earlier. We have to evolve. So we got to get away from being theorists into actual practical application. The guy in the street, they do this, so they know what works for them. They have actual proof. They have the truth on their side. But we basically say what we're going to do, but we don't do it. And this is why I'm saying we got to introduce truth into our training. We got to evolve.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir. Brother Carlos, hey. Thank you.
I think that they're two sides of the whole truth. When you're talking about truth, it's the truth. If you start at zero, truth going from zero to 10, that's truth. Truth going from zero to negative 10 is also truth. But that machine that they have when you put the money in to see how hard you can hit, I don't know if you guys ever seen that machine. You know, you put your quarter in, whatever, and it shows how hard you can hit. Well, I think the vast majority of people, when they get in front of that machine, they think to themselves, I want to hit this thing very hard. You're going to see them throw a right, an overhand right. Now, it might have a slight curve to it. They might throw it from outside the shoulder. Like you say, they might wind up and throw it back, but by the time it gets to the shoulder and going forward, it's going to take the form of an overhand, normally cutting down kind of right. But shoveling, it may now, or what Bruce Lee called a shoveling hook, which is kind of between
Carlo, I appreciate that. I want you to answer my question, though, about teaching the hook earlier inside of a the lesson. That, do you agree or disagree that we should prepare for the hook earlier in our training in Marshall?
I mean, I think that the hook should be introduced. You should have any course of mm-hmm. instruction introduce the mm-hmm. hook. Boom. I mean, you shouldn't. I think you should introduce the hook the same week you introduce.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Right. You know,
that answers my question. Okay, and again, that's what Colin, what we're talking about, the evolution, because going back to the other side of that truth, it's not taught the same week. And again, that's your truth, that's your belief, and that's what I was interested in here. Thank you for that. Sheikh.
Yeah. Thank you, Soki. I want to start saying, mm-hmm. One, I appreciate going into this because you kind of gave me permission, because I literally start my classes, they do round punches first because of that, mm-hmm. because of the street. Tell that to the parents.
Mm-hmm.
No, I don't see any kid hitting your child with a straight punch at recess.
Mm-hmm.
For Brother Carlos, the overhand right, I understand what he's saying, but that's the right hand. It's not regional. The overhand right mm-hmm. is a circular punch. It is a circle, you know, overhand mm-hmm. is not a straight punch. Mm-hmm. And when people, i.e. taking the punch machine, when somebody's trying to attack you, run your pockets, whatever it is, they're like it's like that PDF. They want to inflict pain, damage, and fear.
Mm-hmm.
So they're Come not on. Standing there, nobody's punching you like they're fencing, like a lunge. You know, they're cocking back, they swinging wildly, they want you to flinch, they want you to close your eyes, they want you to be afraid, you know, so that they can have their way with you. So they're not coming at you, you know, trying to score a point like in the Taekwondo tournament where you got a chest pad, it got a big blue circle in it, and I got to score this point. Mm-hmm. That's not what they're doing. They're trying to knock your block off. So it is mm-hmm. imperative to train that earlier, because if mm-hmm. if you spend 3 to 6 months training at mm-hmm. somebody's dojo and you haven't learned how to mm-hmm. guard yourself from a hook punch yet, you're going to walk away mm-hmm. feeling like, I've been taking karate all this time and I haven't learned nothing.
Come on. Thank you for that,
you know,
bro. I appreciate that. Yes, sir. Hey, great, great, great comments, brother. Brother Vic, I want to get you in here.
You have to meet Sophie?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Mm-hmm. I think that we should teach punches coming from all angles on the numbers on the clock, like the Leo diagram. That way you'll cover the overhand, because I remember Chuck Liddell, if you remember, anybody remember Chuck Liddell, he used to throw a faint jab and an overhand. That was his one, that was his mm-hmm. technique. Everybody would knock you mm-hmm. down with that. Faint the jab and then come looping overhand and catch him. And mm-hmm. that's the brother just was on said. That's the angle that punch is coming
mm-hmm.
over top of your left eye, your right eye. And you're looking at that mm-hmm. jab, or you might punch it, you see the jab, but that overhand is coming, and that's the knockout punch.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. I try to yes, tell, sir. I try in class, I try to teach basically like the clock. Punches 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, 11 o'clock.
I like that.
Angles.
I like that. I definitely. Yes, sir. I tend to think, again, as I said before, is, you know, we've had this, I don't want to say argument, but discussion in the martial art many a times about training for the thing that we're preparing for. Why are we not training our legs? And, some would argue with a pole vaulter that you should train his legs because he needs that velocity to get up. And some would say, hey, he better have good upper body strength so he could pull himself up over there. And even though it's a balance of both, there's also a flexibility that he has to be able to do to arch his back to get over. So if you ask 10 pole vaulters what should they be training the most on, you would have a truth 10 times differently, because not everyone would agree. But again, what we talk about is, we started that talking about, is there's such a thing as a double truth. And we proved that here with this conversation here today. But I wanted to go back to, well, if this is true, then how is this true too? And that's kind of where I was going with when I started asking you about this particular martial situation. Then when people come into our school, 90% of the time, they are looking to be taught against a straight punch, because whether it's Karate Do or Wing Chun, that's what's coming at you. They're teaching you about this straight, either close quarter punch or this straight punch that comes from a chamber that's loaded up and delivered with hit power, much like a musket kind of thing. You know, you put the ball in there and you just hope the gunpowder pushes the fist forward. Because as Brother Carlos would say, if you was doing that punching machine, I don't think I've ever seen anybody use that machine and use a straight reverse punch or thrust punch.
Yep.
So they wouldn't even think to do that, almost as if it's embarrassing. Now, I had, I don't know if anybody remember, there was a show, a martial arts show, that was testing the power of kicks or punches, and they would hit this dummy. Yeah, and this dummy had electronic meters on it and whatnot. Well, they tested the karate roundhouse. They tested the taekwondo. This was just that kick in different styles and capoeira. But most people did not understand that the capoeira's roundhouse was the most powerful of all roundhouses. Now, as much as taekwondo practices the power of kicking and evolved their whole system around kicking, even though capoeira is I don't know, stop me if I'm wrong, but I don't know of no punches in capoeira. It's concentrating on the kick. But what they did was they kicked from a lower frame, like underneath this guy's hip, and delivered the roundhouse. And it was devastating. It was almost twice as much as everyone else's kick that was kicking upright because they were kicking from the ground up. So, again, going back to the Street Fighter, he gets his power from beneath his hip. He's going to bring that punch up from there and hope that the kinetic energy that comes up from there is going to be enough to, as Brother Sheikh said, PDF. And I tend to think that once we study the street fighter or street person's PDF mentality, we'll understand that there is no blocking of it. There is really no movement. It's understanding how to counterbalance that and to be prepared to minimize that, if nothing else, by our nerve twitch. And the more we train our nerve twitch like this, this is how come you could see some boxers, again, like the great Muhammad Ali, who made someone miss him 16 times when his back was against the ropes in a corner. That's nerve twitch there. That's trained nerve twitch. I mean, he couldn't possibly see the punch when it was coming, and this person was throwing him with commitment. And he was a professional boxer, but if you ever watch that clip, you will see that he was not throwing boxing punches. He was trying to murderize him. That's a word that I learned when I was in school. You know what I'm saying? So when people are putting that kind of content in there, much again, like we say with the Chinese, study the animal that you're preparing to defend against. All right? And that's what I meant. But the Street Fighter is an animal that I wouldn't agree that he's regional. I just tend to think that no matter where he is, he's going to resort to that which contributes to the pain, the destruction, and the fear. And I think that's what we're talking about here. If you can survive his onset, now I think it's my turn, and he's going to get a science lesson for free. And it should end right there. Because much like I see inside of many martial art tournaments nowadays, I watch black belts there, and when the punches that they throw at each other don't look nothing that's in the school, nothing. Nope. These are black belts, the way they be punching at each other and slapping at each other and just pushing at each other and trying to get the AKA point, delivering. It's not like when I grew up. There was individuals like Donnie Collins. There was individuals like Speedy Lookup Sledge. There was individuals like Kevin Thompson and Michael Lookup Sledge. These guys were known for their reverse punch. They plan it, and it's like it will make you scream when you see it because the timing that they delivered it was uncanny, catching a guy off his coming in. But this hardly ever practiced. And I'd rather you practice it in your craft to see if it works and to go back and tweak it until you can make it work than for you to just to abort it and do anything just so you can just do whatever it is that you're doing. And so what I was really asking the question from the teacher's point of view, should there be a reevaluation, or maybe not even reevaluate? Now, you can go in their school tomorrow and add the hook. But do you think that you are defying your first truth if you use two truths? And I'm gonna ask that question and close the show out on that. By using two truths, do you think that you are defying one or the other? Tiny?
No.
Okay. Celine?
No, sir.
C-John? He may have stepped away. Hawk?
Yeah.
Yes, sir. I'm sorry. Could we restate the question, please?
I said by using two truths, are you nullifying one or the other because you use two? Shake?
No, sir.
Brother Carlo? Maybe he stepped away as well. Guru Vic?
No, I don't think what we're talking about is a matter of two truths. I mean, really, I think it's we're borderline on a logical fallacy. It's kind of a slippery slope, so to speak, I believe. I might be the wrong one, but I think we're looking at
I use a lot of that on this show. I use a lot of slippery slopes because I kind of want to – I want you to be on one side of the line, but I know that's hard for a lot of people. But I didn't say it was a matter of either one of the – I'm just saying, would it be a fallacy to say that because I use one over the other that I nullify one because it
no.
can only be one truth?
Yeah,
okay, that was my question.
Not
okay.
At all.
Shake, I'm sorry. Did I get you, Shake?
Yes, sir. You got me. I said no, it doesn't.
Oh, okay. And Google Vic?
I said no, Soki.
Okay, great. And for all the rest of y'all, what is that? 15 people are alive just listening and shaking your head and didn't push the number one. I got to give a sign of credit and a courtesy bow to all of those brothers that stayed on my line here today and accepted my abuse, so to speak, my cross-examination. You can't handle the truth. I'm surprised somebody didn't break out and say that to me. but it was a great conversation in the way of us projecting ourselves to a higher level of understanding about the world we live in. And not to disrespect or denigrate anybody's truth, because everybody's truth counts. And I think that that's where we mess up sometimes. We tend to think that we dismiss other things. It's very true. We do the ostrich thing. And I say that we as black belts, as martial artists, I'm quite sure each and every one of y'all has been in a room that have watched somebody do just that. And we shake our heads, but remember, lessons are given to us by different people in different times. As my grandmother would say, out of the mouths of babes comes the truth. Do not think that because you've been on the planet longer than somebody or you've been in the art longer than somebody that you can't learn a truth because they come in all forms. And so I want to thank everybody for being on the show as usual. Please, I hope that if you're in the regional area of New York, 8 Henry Street is the address. You can go online to buy tickets for The Deadly Art of Survival. I know that most of y'all on the line will be there. C.J. Gettling and myself were honored to be on the cover of the 5th edition. We will be there, God willing, to meet and greet you. So hopefully you'll make it out to that as well. My theme music is not cued today, so we're just going to have to go out on an AIO and clap our hands and snap our fingers to the beat as we move on out the door. But as usual, gentlemen, till next time, may your good be better, and may your better be blessed. AIO.
AIO.
Thank you. Thank you, brothers. Thank you for being here.
Heart to heart.
Do what we keep on doing, all right? Please make sure that you, you know, reach out to your brethren and let them know that, you know, there was some truth is spoken here every Friday. We appreciate them, and we have a seat in here for them as well. Congratulations to all those people who are back out and traveling again and coming across the country. I know C.J. Getlin has a couple of things coming up, too. Reach out to him and other people in different parts of the state so that we can keep our unity together. No excuses, right? Everything is just
right.
If you want it done, you got to do it. AIO.
AIO.
Us.